afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this supplementary PERSH board meeting on April 24, 2020. This is Sadhna Shenoy. If all the board members would please identify themselves as well as the staff, then we can get on with the agenda.
Lawrence Bernstall, Vice Chair, is here.
Stephen Buckley.
Jardon Jaramillo.
Stephen Demarest.
Wonderful. Kevin is there, and Stephanie
Wong. Yes, and Jason Stanley.
Yes, wonderful. Good, so it looks like we have all the board members present, and I declare this meeting open with my virtual gavel. I hope that everyone has been keeping good health and good spirits in these very unusual circumstances. Today's meeting has been called to keep the agency's administrative rulemaking on track without having to wait for the scheduled May-end meeting. So Director Olenek, do you have any comments before we turn over to Stephanie for agenda item A1?
No, I'm good. Thank you, Chair Shenoy.
Okay, Stephanie?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Shenoy, members of the board. For the record, Stephanie Vaughn with PERS. First of all, thank you very much for accommodating our special rulemaking timeline with the supplemental board meeting. And this particular board meeting actually gives us an opportunity to address an additional issue timely, specifically COVID-19, which is related to agenda item number one. Policy staff has been evaluating all of the timelines, deadlines, and processes associated with PERS, and to determine whether any mitigating efforts are necessary with regard to or in reaction to COVID-19. That evaluation is ongoing, as some timelines may need to be mitigated the longer that we are in under the governor's stay-home order. For now, we have one temporary rule that we are bringing forward in relation to the governor's order and mitigating efforts. This is regarding specifically the retirees' health insurance program. And this rule will prevent any retiree who is unable to make their premium payment while we are under the governor's order to lose their health insurance. It does not alleviate them from having to make the payment, but they will have until 30 days after the governor's order is lifted to make those premium payments. We are, as I said, continuing our evaluation. Just as a side note, the enrollment period for health insurance is another thing that we're looking on, because the Social Security offices are currently closed. So that is something else that we are considering implementing a mitigating effort for. As well, we have evaluated the federal coronavirus aid relief and economic securities act, or the CARES Act. It's much easier to say CARES. And we've determined what PERS needs to do to implement the relevant provisions of that act. So we will be bringing forward at the May board meeting rule amendment in order to incorporate the relevant provisions of that act for OSGP. So are there questions? Okay.
Stephanie, so I had a question. Line 20 of the procedural rules talks about any person whose payments are received in full within 30 days after the state of emergency is no longer in effect. So is this the grace period or the extension period that is permitted? Is there anything more, for example, due to financial difficulties caused by COVID, if certain members cannot make their health insurance payments? What kind of a solution is being looked at?
So this suspends the payments while they are during the stay-home order, and it does give 30 days. The federal requirements under CMS, we have to give, I believe, 45 days notice in order before someone is terminated. So while this says the payment has to be made within the 30 days, they, I guess, technically would have 45 if we send the notice on the day that the order is lifted. So they actually have 45 days from the date that we send the notice that they need to make the payment. Is that what you were asked?
Yeah, and then those rules will come in at the May meeting.
We can clarify the our regular process as far as what we do there, because it is a process before we actually turn someone's coverage off. So there is a process involved, and we can lay that out for you or explain that to you at the May board meeting. I don't know off the top of my head.
Fine. Okay.
All right. I know there's
go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say, I know there's another 21-day time period, too, so I'm not sure how they all work together. I'd have to research that, yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, at a higher level, my question was more about, have we done everything we need to do, or is this just a first shot and then further clarification will come at later meetings?
This is also in response to the Department of Consumer and Business Services issued an order basically requiring this so that nobody can lose their health insurance coverage. So we are following, this is in line with the DCBS order. We have not looked into further at this point any other modifications that we might make individually as PERS. But we don't have, we'd have to work with our third-party insurance companies because they're the ones who would have to agree to and work with us on any other mitigating efforts with regard to the health insurance.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So we are presenting the temporary rule for adoption today, so it would be effective today. We're looking for a motion to adopt as presented.
Chair Shenoy, I move that we adopt the new temporary rule regarding the mitigation of the impact of the COVID-19 outbreak on PERS members.
I
second.
Wonderful. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Wonderful. Anyone denying the motion? Okay. So moved.
Excellent. Thank you. And item A2 is notice of our rules implementing the member redirect portion of Senate Bill 1049. As a quick reminder, the member redirect portion of Senate Bill 1049 requires that a portion of the member's 6% contribution will be deposited into a new member account that is called the Employee Pension Stability Account, or EPSA, or EPSA. Those contributions are required when the funded status of the plan is less than 90%, including employer side accounts, and the member's monthly income exceeds $2,500. As you'll notice, there are a number of rules in this package, but most of them are actually amended or being touched for clarification purposes. So the EPSA is actually an account that is created under the existing individual account program. So it is technically an IAP account, and throughout our rules, we've always referred to just the IAP account because until now, we've only had really the employee account under the IAP. So a lot of the amendments to these rules is to distinguish the IEP employee account from the EPSA account, particularly where it's necessary because the EPSA is going to be treated differently or administered differently than the existing employee account under the IEP. So more than half of these rules are being edited just for that clarification. We have six rules that, sorry, go ahead. Did you have a question? Sorry, okay. So we have six rules that are making specific substantive changes, and I'll point those out for you. The first is 459-080-0400, the last one on the list on the memo. That is a new rule that explains the administration of the new EPSA. We have four rules in the earnings crediting division, which is 459007. The existing annual earnings crediting rule, which is 0005, explains, it actually separates out the EPSA accounts because they will not be included in target date funds. So they needed to be, they need to have their own direction as far as earnings crediting. We have three new rules in that division, division 007. We have 350, 360, and 370, which all explain, which each explains, I should say, how the member's individual EPSA will be credited with earnings in particular circumstances, specifically withdrawal, retirement, and death. And the last rule that has substantive changes is 0750020, which is a withdrawal from the OPSERP pension program rule. One of the things that Senate Bill 1049 did is eliminate withdrawals from the OPSERP pension program effective July 1st, 2020. And the amendments to this rule incorporate that change. So this is notice only, so no action is required at this time. And we do anticipate bringing these forward for adoption at the June board meeting. Are there any questions?
Chair Shinoy, Steve Demers, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Stephanie, on my question regards the new rule 459007-0360. It's page 24 of 44 in the packet, crediting earnings to the employee pension stability account at death. And section two, says that any amount that's not applied to the cost of a monthly benefit will be paid to the beneficiary in a lump sum. Any remaining lump sum that is not paid out in the first month of distribution will be moved to the retirement installment fund. So I'm not following. Why would there be, if there's any amount that's not applied to the cost of benefit, is paid out to the beneficiary as a lump sum, why would there be a remaining lump sum?
Chair Shinoy, Board Member Demers, that's a good question, and this is something that is probably confusing at first look, but because the EPSA will be used in towards the expense or the cost of any pension benefit for a beneficiary, if there's anything remaining after that is funded, it actually, that remaining balance gets paid out as an IEP amount. So we currently have in our earnings crediting rule for the IEP at death, in the event we have multiple beneficiaries and say we, one of them requests their benefit and is paid out in that first month, we pay that out. But at the end of that month, the other two beneficiaries still haven't requested their payout. We're moving that amount to the retirement installments fund, which receives the monthly, is invested in the short-term fund and receives monthly earnings crediting. So this is taking any lump sum amount that isn't, remaining lump sum amount that is not paid out into, it's doing the same thing. It's putting it into that retiree installment account for future payout.
Okay, I understand. Thank you, Stephanie.
Okay.
I have a question on page two of your memo. It's not really a question. It's more of a clarification. And let me get there. So on page seven of this package, you say that in the first paragraph, the redirect of member contribution is based on the funded status of the plan as determined in a rate setting valuation. So right now we would be at the December 2019 rate setting valuation, and that will be the funded status applied until 2021.
Actually, we would use as of 7/1/2020, we would go on the last rate setting valuation, which would have been 2017.
18.
So, what the rate setting for the period that we're currently in. So it would have been the funded status as of the 2017 valuation. And then once for 7/1/2021 is when we make that determination as far as the funded status of the plan for purposes of redirecting member contributions, and it would be based on the 2019 funded status.
Okay.
And it's good, we only evaluate it every 2 years. So once it's, we make that determination at the same time that employer rates go into effect, and that's when we would either turn it on or turn off, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so that was a little bit of a, okay. So the employer contributions that are currently in used were based on the 2017 valuation, and that's the valuation current. Okay, got it, yeah.
Yep, okay.
Perfect. Okay, any other comments from the board on these two items? Okay, thank you,
awesome.
Stephanie.
Great, thank you.
Wonderful. So before we close, I would like to commend Director Olenek and his staff with special kudos to the IT department for the excellent work that has been going on, of course, during these past few weeks. Director Olenek has said that thanks to efficiencies and the work ethic of staff, PERS has experienced no decline in productivity during this crisis. And I would like to invite Kevin to just take a minute or two and share your thoughts on how things have been going.
Thank you, Chair Shinoy. Yes, we are very fortunate that in a very short period of time, our information services group were able to expand our virtual private network capabilities and be able to move staff out. We started with those staff who self-identified as vulnerable. And then once we had the capacity to do so, we allowed those staff who wanted to telecommute to do so. So as of last Friday, a week ago, anybody that wanted to telecommute was given the capability to do so. So we're at about 295 staff who are currently telecommuting, with about another 80 staff either in headquarters, Tualatin, or our Salem offices. So very quick turnaround given where we started from, and as you noted, we are encountering, we had a bit of a productivity dip as people got used to working from home, but as of now we seem to be working very well in all aspects of the operation. So kudos to our information service department and as well as our management staff who helped negotiate it and assist staff in being able to telecommute and continue on with regular operations, even though we hadn't planned to start formally telecommuting for another year. So when in times of when you're forced to do something, you come up with a way of doing it rather quickly. So very pleased with how responsive and resilient our staff have been.
Wonderful. And so if there are no other comments on the board, we will end on this very positive note. All board members okay?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, so call a close to this meeting once again with my virtual gavel. Your meeting is closed.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.